chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Welcome back. Welcome in. This is Country Roads Confidential at earsports.com. This is a Paramount podcast. I am Mike Cassazza, here to talk a little bit of college basketball at West Virginia University. I'm going to go over some time capsule stuff. If you put this season in a box and buried it, which some of you probably want to do or have wanted to do for a while, well, what would you think about it 20 years from now, 10 years from now, when you come across that box as you're doing some other yard work? What would you think about? How would you remember these Mountaineers? And to help me out here, I'm going to bring in Chris Anderson. Chris, a forgettable season? Memorable season? Or is it forgettable because it's memorable and memorable because it's forgettable? Have I spun you in a circle yet with my wordplay?
You've spun me in a circle. But it feels relevant to discuss this right now, in part because of what happened on Saturday. Because what happened Saturday was like a literal once in a generation type loss. And no one was surprised and no one cared. Yeah. I put the stat up on Twitter and on our message board, pointing out that, you know, this was on first off, I think this was back-to-back losses when the team has shot 50% from the floor and 40% from three. And they're 2-3 in their last five games, which dates back to last year. It's not just this year. But prior to that, they were 29-1. That's not the stat I'm talking about, but it was the largest lead that West Virginia University has held in a game that they ended up losing by double digits since 2007. I believe it was the Cincinnati. Somebody found it, and it was a 17-point lead against Cincinnati way back when, during the Beeline years. And that's the only one I can find. There's only three games I can find with at least 15 points, the other being Syracuse in 2003 when Carmelo Anthony went crazy in the second half. And then you add in Saturday. Those are the only three times this entire century that has happened, and as likely goes back even further. And we can get into why is it so hard to find play-by-plays pre-2010. I don't know the answer to that. It doesn't feel like that long ago, but that's the kind of company we're talking about with Saturday's loss. And you go and you look at it and you talk to other West Virginia fans and they're just like, yeah, just another loss. And that's where it's like memorable because they're doing things poorly that have never been done before, but forgettable because no one cares, which is crazy.
The DVD that you'll buy a couple of years from now, it's going to be like the unprecedented 23-24 West Virginia University basketball team. I could see. Remember they used to do those like highlight videos at the end of the year, like recruiting videos, they called them, right? You put it together and they put it, like send it to their recruits. I don't think they do any of that stuff anymore because everything is available in an instant. Maybe that's why that kind of gets hard to do that. So a couple more historic things here that I think are interesting, maybe you've read or not, about what's going to come here. Probably soon, if not inevitably, quite likely they're going to at least match the school record for losses in a season. Right now, the 15-21 team in 2018-2019 has the record. West Virginia currently has 20 losses. They're probably going to tie that by the time that we talk next week, at least, right? They got two games left, and I don't think they're going to go 2-0. And then obviously they lose in the tournament, or if they lose in their postseason bid, two more losses, they set the school record. Chris, should they not set the school record by the time that we talk next week, they will have avoided this bullet. One team in school history has not had a winning streak. Think about like how like even bad teams or mediocre teams, they'll start like 3-0, 5-0 in non-conference play because they play Monmouth and they play Drexel and they play Radford and they win those games. That hasn't happened this year. They haven't won back-to-back games. They've had seven losing streaks. They haven't had one winning streak. Go back to the 1918 team that was, I believe, 4-13. They only played 17 games. That team did not have a winning streak. That's the only other one I can find in school history. So, again, you might want to like bury this season, but you're going to put it next to some really weird skeletons because, like you said, things that never happen are things that rarely happen, things you do not want to happen again. Chris, I was in school during a 20-loss season. I covered a 21-loss season. I might cover a 23-loss season. Clearly, it's me, right?
I'm trying to go back and look up because as I was trying to find some of that data for the biggest lead and then into eventual double-digit loss, there were a couple seasons. I mean, even that 2018-19 season where team was super young. I believe that was the year that, like, Issa Ahmad and – was it Lamont West? Were like gone halfway. No, Lamont West was there for the rest of the year. Maybe that
was gone for a while. Beetle Bolden, Wes Harris.
Yeah. And even that team started out 8-4, started out 5-2. There was another team that I think started out like 13-2. Like, you know, again, like you noted, like at least they get the wins in non-conference and then things kind of fell apart after that. That's just not happening this year. Like you said, they just never had the momentum, never had anything going. And yeah, and again, that's what I mean. There is, hey, the only scenario where they don't set the record or at least tie the record is, well, no, they're going to tie the record unless they win the national championship, of course. Mm-hmm. The only scenario where they don't win the record or break the record for all-time losses is they win the Big 12 championship. So, you know, again, we're talking crazy stuff here where they're either not breaking the record or they're setting some kind of craziness. I don't know. This is bringing me down to all sorts of different levels with this team because now I'm starting to think about that win over Kansas, even though the Jayhawks look a little more vulnerable than maybe they did last week. That win still seems wild to me, given what we've seen from West Virginia of late, too.
Speaking of unprecedented, this is the most losses that a Bill Self team has ever had in conference play anywhere. Not just Kansas, but like Illinois, Tulsa, like where he's been. He's never had seven conference losses before, too. So a strange season.
Speaking Are you saying season, that Bill Self should be at the top of Hot Board 2.0? Is that what you're saying?
Give it to the threes, at least.
Okay.
You got to get that high major coach, Chris. He's right for the picking.
That Lose was a good story. Self. I like that story that you put up.
Well, thanks. 8-20 team, Chris, started 4-0, 6-1. It's doing okay. And then had a 9-game losing streak, a win over Providence, and then another 9-game losing streak. So things do go bad in a hurry there. The reason we bring this up, Chris, is that, I mean, clearly, middle of May, you didn't see this coming. And then probably beginning of June, you just didn't see this coming. And this is not what they had because they didn't have Quinn Slezinski, Noah Farrakhan, a cook. Not that those are bad players or to be blamed for this situation, but they were not supposed to be part of this because they were supposed to have Joe Toussaint, who wrecked West Virginia, the Coliseum Saturday. They were supposed to have Muhammad Wagi. They were supposed to have James Okonkwo. They were supposed to have Trey Mitchell. They were supposed to have Bob Huggins. They were supposed to be in possession of the number one transfer portal class in the country. Maybe that would have changed still if they kept those parts and Hunter Dickinson still went to Kansas, but maybe the season turns out different for West Virginia and not so for Kansas, and perhaps it's West Virginia, you know, playing for something really significant here. There's going to be a lot of change whenever the job is officially open and then somebody's hired and comes in. And I do think kind of blank slates it. I don't, their contract situation is, Chris, really unique and probably beneficial. No one's on a contract. Like DeMar Johnson had a 2-year contract last year. It's up. This is his second year. All the assistant coaches they hired are on 1-year deals. Josh Arley is on a 10-month contract. So they can really just start from scratch. They can bring people back if they want, but they're not beholden to anybody. They'll pay people out what's left in their contract if they don't keep them. They'll make everybody square. But it could be an entirely different thing because, like, included in those one-year contracts would be your Jay Kuntz, who's your director of personnel and recruiting operations. I wouldn't guarantee that he's back, which kind of goes over to all this stuff here. The things that you thought West Virginia had going for itself in May, in June, maybe even in October, September, you can't feel as strong or as confident about those before, which makes you think, okay, what you might have as your, again, your time capsule moment here is that this is what changed everything before the season. West Virginia into the portal, buying players, being successful, to everything that happened on the court. I don't know how you couldn't look at this and be like, this isn't the way to do it. We've got to be smarter, better, more efficient, more effective. Where do you begin on reconciling this season as to what didn't work, and then how do you prevent it in the future?
It's going to be very, very difficult, because tied into what you're discussing right there is essentially earning back the trust of your biggest donors, your biggest NIL people. And this goes back to something you and I discussed like way earlier in the season of, hey, things are going south here. Is this going to hurt, you know, the ability to get kind of repeat donors for this NIL money? Like, are you going to have the same budget moving forward? And with each passing game, with each passing week, as you see that it's not working out, it's going to make it more difficult. And I think that's what's going to be the hardest part. And it goes back to our conversation last week about, what are you looking for in a coach? What do they must have? And it was like, hey, he's got to be able to fundraise, and because he's got to be able to fundraise in order to get the money, in order to get the players. And you got to convince all these people, because if you're one of those people that donated, you know, $1 million or something to NIL, and then this is the product you get, like, those people don't become millionaires because they're idiots. Most of them don't, but they're smart with their money, and they will see this was a bad investment, and they won't want to do it again. And I think West Virginia really is going to have to try to kind of re-recruit those donors again.
Yeah. So kind of wrote a story shedding some light on West Virginia's NIL last couple of days. Was it a Friday news dump, Chris? I can't even remember. Wasn't a Friday news dump in that sense. I think I might've written on Friday though, actually. And, like, I don't think a lot of people wanted to read that. I think a lot of people need to read that. The reality of West Virginia's NIL situation. If you haven't read it, go read it. Because I think it's important, because you have a pretty clever report by On3. I could say them, right? But kind of quizzed some coaches about from the Big 12, I believe, maybe just college basketball. But there are several from the Big 12 who talked up the West Virginia job and why it's going to be appealing, what could be beneficial, what could be prohibitive. But, like, the one thing that everybody seemed to be in lockstep about was that the NIL program is really good. Some people said it has all the NIL money you can have, and that's not true. And I just wonder about, like, people 6 weeks from now who see a head coach come in, and, like, the coach is like, well, we got to get NIL going. Like, wait a minute. I thought West Virginia had the best NIL. West Virginia does not have the best NIL. Had a great summer, didn't have a great season. And those things are certainly tied together in the past to the future. And I just don't think you can replicate that. Go read that story. I'm not going to recite it for you here, but that's kind of what we're talking about. It's going to be an important thing. And I just don't know what you do now, Chris. Do you, like, they went and got three big names. They spent big money on three people: Jesse Edwards, Raekwon Battle, Kerr Creasa. Individually, collectively, a mixed bag for just different reasons. Like, neither one of them played a full season. I think they each missed 9+ games. Battle missed 10, Edwards missed 9, Creasa missed 9 for different reasons. An NCAA investigation or misdeeds for Kerr Creasa that maybe you should have known about. I don't know how you figured that one out. And I would be surprised if there wasn't some deception involved in there. Leave it at that. Battle probably should have known that was going to be an uphill battle, but they certainly tried and tried and tried until they won, or at least they prevailed, I should say, with a temporary restraining order. You have no idea Jesse Edwards is going to break his wrist, even though he did it last year. I wouldn't say he's injury prone. It was a different wrist. Is that enough to make you think differently, Chris? And then even if you could, you know what, the portal was okay for those three guys, but man, look at Slezinski and Farrakhan and Cook. They weren't supposed to be here. I don't want to call them consolation prizes or bridesmaids or whatever you want to say, maybe groomsmen, but it's hard for me to put a lot on them because they weren't supposed to be here. And Farrakhan wasn't even supposed to be playing this year, and he's playing the way he has lately. It's really a mixed bag. Like, I don't know what's fair, what's pointed, what's correct. I just think that you can't have this happen again, but it also seems like it'd be really hard to have this exact same thing happen again. So, you know, kind of like baby bathwater, so to speak. I don't know how you, again, how do you reconcile this one?
And if you look at it, like you said, individually, these three players, let's focus on these three players. Raekwon Battle, even making the move from Montana State to West Virginia, very similar numbers to last year's numbers at Montana State. If you told, say, the people who funded that NIL to get him, they'd be pleased with that. Jesse Edwards, very similar numbers to what he posted at Syracuse last year when he was learning all conference. If you told people that, they'd be very pleased with that. Kirk Risa, the best numbers by far of his collegiate career, including a 43% from three-point range, which I don't think a lot of people saw coming. You'd be thrilled with that too. So then that brings it down to, okay, wait, so is the problem NIL? Is it other issues? Like you said, there's going to be more problems, but if you're one of those people trying to re-recruit the donors, you can point to these things. Hey, the guys that we spent money on, if I'm here making the pitch as the person, not we, but if the people that they spent the money on, they produced, period. Again, they all missed, what, a third of the season, basically. So that kind of makes it difficult, but they have all produced at least two expectations, if not exceeded them so far.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Yeah, this is a whole new dynamic. It's injected just volatility, unpredictability into rosters, which are kind of volatile and unpredictable on their own too. But I would be very surprised if there wasn't just a natural moat between players who were here and who came in. Like, why can't I be a starting guard right now? Why can't I be getting these shots? And like, you haven't really seen that manifest itself in the court, but like, if you're a Kobe Johnson or a Seth Wilson or Josiah Harris, like, it's got to be difficult to get yourself up knowing you're going to get knocked down no matter what, because they paid more money for that person to come in and do what you weren't going to be expected to do or not thought capable of doing. That's got to be difficult too. And then, you know, Who's really in charge? Is it the people who paid the NIL? Is it the coaches? Is it the people who are paid the NIL? Or is it the coaches? And like, that's something I don't know. Like, I mean, I'd be just not a ton of solid evidence on the inside, but I would be very surprised if like people who are being paid to be here listen to everything perfectly and don't think that they have some like favored nation status because they're getting paid $600,000 to be here. Like, that's going to be something you're going to have to manage too, which kind of goes to my next question. How many players can you bring in, Chris? Like, they may have to bring in 10 or 13. I don't know. But if you're going to use the transfer portal in a regular year, or maybe even this next coming year, forget the big fish to the minnows, like the people who are going to be your major dollar spend expenditures and people you got to piece together to put together a roster. But you've definitely seen the issues they've had this year coming together. It could have happened in November instead of January. It's still going to happen, though. Is there a number that's too big? Like, we look at this now and they brought in, what, I think 7 transfers? I don't know if you can actually do that and feel good about it in the future. Like, would that be too big of a number? Do you got to keep a cap on it to, like, maybe 4 or 5? Can you have freshmen in? I just feel like a lot of college veterans coming in at once to get theirs because it's their last chance, their second chance. I don't know how you get them all to, like, stir in the right direction at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, this offseason, the number is going to be 10, probably at least. The number that you're ideally shooting for in a regular year, probably 4 or 5. Like you said, you start bringing in too many guys. I mean, 4 or 5 might even be too many, at least as far as seniors go. Maybe you mix it up with some underclassmen and everything to kind of have guys fill in their role. But 4 to 5 across a couple different classes sounds about ideal. Not this offseason. This offseason is going to be 10. It's going to be weird. It's going to be a couple guys that, hey, just like when we were talking about our salary cap for NIL, if you and I were putting together a team, how would we spend it? It's going to be similar to that. You're going to probably have a couple guys that are very good. You're going to have a couple guys who are kind of good. And then you're going to have guys just kind of filling out the bench and taking some flyers on guys who may or may not be eligible and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think West Virginia is going to have much of a choice, unfortunately.
Go beneath the surface here too. Neil Brown made a difference because his transfers hit this past year. Consensus All-American, some just valuable players in offense and defense and even special teams. It worked. It worked better than it had his prior few years when a lot of people were still learning the portal, and he just took maybe a year longer. And obviously he was a little bit behind because he did not have the NIL apparatus at his back. He even said that they were kind of slow to start and slow to accelerate. But once it got going, it was fine. He won, and they've been healthier by far with their NIL capability this offseason. Gotten some players from major programs, some high targets. They've won some battles, lost some battles, but two things. One, they can do more because they did more last year. And two, they kind of have a benefit of the doubt because it wasn't a complete failure last year. Like, far more successes than failures last year. There's something to be said about what they did, though, behind the scenes. It wasn't just winning. They put a general manager in with pro and college experience, and they kind of set this up like an NFL front office where you come in, and if you want NIL, they say, we value this at this number. And the other person says, well, actually, I read this here. And they said, that number is nonsense. This is what we think. We can do this. Let's talk. And then you kind of take it or leave it and you go there. But they also scouted a lot better, too. They scouted a lot better. They found players they liked that were kind of like in lockstep across the board. You didn't have to talk a defensive assistant or an offensive assistant and taking this guy because you liked him. Everybody agreed. This is what we're looking for. This is who we're looking for. Never mind the position, but the way the person played or practiced or was spoken about by teammates or coaches, hey, it was all good. Do you have to apply that to basketball? Do you got to get a much more mature, effective scouting staff and their general manager, treat it like a front office, which I think they were trending toward anyways. And do you, I mean, not just if you're looking for players, don't go right to the top of the rankings. Who do you like? Oh, we need a scorer. We need a three-point shooter. We need a low post guy. We need a guy who can just screen and roll. Rather than getting like the best players or focusing on the stars, do you try to be more holistic with how you build a roster here? Because again, I don't think that West Virginia's football acquisitions have blown people away, being like, oh my gosh, one of the top players at his position of the portal. But Beanie Bishop turned out to be one of the best players in the country last year. That seems more important. And I don't know if they ever saw that, but they liked him for a reason. And the way he played was what they thought was possible. What he earned beyond that, I'm sure. But still, they were right. Their hunches were right there. Does basketball lack that? Do they have to acquire that?
It's difficult to say they lack. I mean, it's difficult. They lack it, but it's difficult for me to say whose fault that is technically, which kind of goes back to our comments earlier about assistant coaches on previous podcasts of like, how do you know if they're doing a good job or not? How do you know if what they're doing? Because how is it possible to recruit in this scenario? How is it possible to pull a team together and figure out what kind of dynamics this guy has with this guy, this point guard has with this center? How about this senior? What, you know, layer him with a sophomore here and a junior here and all this stuff? It's impossible to do with an interim coach. I hate to say it, but that's one of the big negatives about an interim coach is that it's an interim. Like, it's temporary. Everyone knows it's temporary. And it is almost, like you said, everybody kind of coming in to do their own thing as far as the players go. Like, they're just here to shine for themselves. Like, I'm not trying to call them selfish, but, you know, you're not building for a program. You're not building for next year, nothing like that. And that makes it very difficult. I think what you're saying there, football did it right, and they got that kind of part figured out, or at least it seems like it. So far, they've got it figured out. And the basketball team needs to do the same thing, but that's not going to happen until they get concrete head coach, you know, 4-year deal, 5-year deal, whatever it is, in there with guys who have, you know, multi-year deals and things like that. Because literally, as you noted, everyone's in their final year of their contract. Everyone in the staff from top to bottom, the entire department in basketball is a lame duck. Like, it's not just Eiler, you know, playing his last, you know, couple weeks here. It's everyone, all, even the assistant coaches they brought in, the new guys, the three young guys, I believe, I remember from your story, they weren't even on full, like, they were on 10-month contracts, just like Eiler. Like, it wasn't even, we're not even getting to you July 1st. It's just, you got 10 months, that's it, then you're out. So it's difficult to kind of build that culture, to do it the right way, to develop and think long-term, big picture, when every single person in the building knows, hey, we got 10 months and then it's over and that's it. Mm-hmm. It is what it is.
At some point you're 6-16 or whatever, and you're like, man, I only have X number of games left. Never mind that. Like, the reality creeps in. And like, what struck me was, I guess the time it like really hit the first time that, boy, it does get through. Like, I think that there's probably a lot of people who are reading or scrolling over there too, but I don't think Josh Eiler's one of them necessarily. But after the Kansas State game, he said that like officials kind of look at him and like, he's not going to be here next year. Why would I pay attention to him? You think he's carrying that around with him? If he's saying that on the radio after the game, like, if he's actually saying that, not thinking, if he's actually saying it, he's probably wearing that too. It just feels so strange to me, Chris, to say like a team that pulled in Raekwon Battle, Kirk Creese, and Jesse Edwards did it wrong. Like, that's wild when you think about it. And again, individually, sure, they have, but like collectively, I don't know. There's going to be like a deep dive or like a scrubbing of this that we probably won't be privy to unless it's like in dark corners of quiet places that they might tell us these things. But I'd be very curious about like the harmony or the disharmony this season, and, you know, what players were easy to work with or difficult to get along with, who had clashes with the NIL office, who, you know, wasn't happy with this and wanted more of this, who just got here and was like, this is a mess, what am I doing? Who wanted to leave and just waiting to leave. Like, there's going to be a lot of details to be written about this and unpacked over time. And I wonder if and when this come out, and if it's going to be a lot like what you think it is. I say this all the time, like, use your eyes. That doesn't help so much this time, but you can look at this and go, that doesn't look good. That doesn't look good. Why aren't they shaking hands after a free throw? Like, why? All the silly things they do that, but also like the things you look at this perceptually, you can sense this doesn't seem right. And I bet you that as the season goes along, the frustrations mount that this was going to be tricky. The problem with fixing this, Chris, is what you mentioned. You know, it might take time, but if you're trying to piece together things, you got to get people who are going to be here for a while. How does this person work with this person? That's just naturally going to take time. Like, I think about when John Beilein went to Michigan, not to evoke his name for any reason, I promise, but everybody thought, man, he's going to play that 1-3-1 in the Big Ten. He did not. Got rid of that quickly because he could recruit much better athletes up there to play basketball the way he envisioned. Like, the 1-3-1 was a stopgap here. It was a way for him around the fact that he wasn't short, fast, strong enough. Wasn't tall, fast, strong enough to play man-to-man with his roster. That was pretty good, nevertheless, right? But he went to the Big Ten in Michigan and was able to build that. And I just think that somebody coming in is going to find that perhaps what he did at a mid-major school or even a high-major school, perhaps, it was easier at this place because of what he had and who he had access to. It was more difficult to do, and, you know, what this person did in the Missouri Valley Conference or the Sun Belt Conference as a means to succeed and survive. Not going to work, but doesn't have to work, because of who and what he has access to here. So it's going to be an interesting, I think, two seasons before you get like a real evaluation of who is what right now in as far as like an incoming coach roster and stuff like that too. But I think a lot of changes are coming too. Do you have other things that you would eyeball as candidates to change? Not necessarily individuals as candidates, but aspects of the program? Could it be, again, that player development piece that we talk about sometimes? Or is it a blind spot in the staff or in recruiting or something like that? You remember recruiting, Chris? I wonder if they'll go back to that. I'm not sure. Anything that jumps to get your attention?
I do think there needs to be, again, man, it's such a good idea, and I hate to keep going back to it, but that football setup where everyone's on the same page, because even football didn't have it right as recently as like a year or two ago, like before these most recent changes, there was still like on this side, the high school recruiting guys and then the transfer recruiting guys. And they weren't, like, they weren't clashing, but they weren't on the same page. They didn't, like, you know, jive with each other. They would check numbers like, hey, what do we need? What do we need? What do we need as far as bodies go for certain positions? But they didn't work together until like a year or so ago. Now, all of a sudden, those two departments are one, essentially. And they work together to figure out, hey, from the seniors that we're bringing in as transfers to the sophomores in high school that we're first starting to watch film on, these are the qualities they need to have to play this position or that position or that position. And obviously that's, I mean, that's not happening in basketball. It's different. There's, you know, you're looking for, you're not looking for as specific as positions and different things like that. But I would like to see more of that kind of continuity, that kind of, hey, we're all on the same wavelength, one straight line here of how we want to develop these players or how we want to recruit already developed players into this program to kind of mesh them as one.
Yeah, that's a great point. It is. And like people saw, you know, personnel leave the football office, that recruiting part, and you're thinking, oh man, this is bad. Well, fine, but when they move someone out, you move someone in, but they didn't necessarily move that person into the same apartment. They restructured things and they found a better way to do it than they had been before. Sometimes you gain by losing here, and like they lost an individual here or there, and you're thinking, that doesn't look good. That's fine, but you can replace that person if you just redesign things a little bit too. And it's probably going to take some of that in basketball too. I wonder about like the research that goes into the homework you have to do about acquiring players. You know, how many years does he have left? Does he have an NCAA problem we should worry about? Will he be eligible? How many waivers does he have? And like, that's going to be murky now, because who knows? Like, who knows what the legislation is going to be, what the governance is going to be. But, you know, their compliance thing, I think they're going to have to ask themselves about, like, is this the right thing to do? Do we have the right people? Do we have the right motivation, inspiration, incentive, whatever? Did we do everything we could have done this year to get these players eligible before the season or earlier in the season? And the answer may be no. And you don't have to change everybody there too. I don't know their contract statuses. I think like anybody who works in that part of the university is year to year. I'm not saying fire anybody in compliance, but like, just is the operation right? Because listen, getting guys onto your campus is one thing, but making sure they can play, that's really important too, especially when you're paying players. So like, just think about like Battle lost 10 games this year. Farrakhan lost all these games, wasn't even supposed to play. Like, these are players you acquired and you're like, you're only getting 2/3 of a season out of them. Like, your ROI or whatever, like, that just logically doesn't add up. And that's a shortcoming too. And does that bankrupt an athletic department? No. Or an NIL apparatus? No. But like, that's not why you're doing business. You're not doing business to give a 100% commitment for a 66% of the product too. So things like that, I think you're going to have to be, why not go back and look at this? Like, everything this year that happened contributed to the product, and you don't want little things or big things to happen again. So yeah, big ticket items, like how they do the recruiting office, a general manager, anything like that. But also smaller things like compliance and governance and all that stuff. Do they have the right, are they asking the right questions? Do they have people who can answer those questions that are there? We'll see. They have to have like, they can't be doing this like I am. They're going to have to know for sure on stuff like that too. Two games left, Chris, at home, TCU. What do you make of a move from 9 p.m. to 7 p.m.? Is that a get these guys off the screen out of primetime move? Is that just kind of one of those things that happens? I've never seen that happen here before.
Did they change the channel too? Was it supposed to be on ESPN2 and now it's just streaming?
Yeah, it's like the Ocho, I believe, right?
Yeah, I mean, now it's just ESPN Plus. Like, that's it. And I mean, that's what it is. Like, you got downgraded just like they do. And I mean, in football, they don't kind of set those channels or anything until later in the season. But like NFL, I mean, the Patriots became the first team to ever be moved off of Monday Night Football because of flex scheduling late in the year. Because they sucked.
They were the team that always got flexed to Sunday nights, and they were undefeated, right? Too. So
yeah, and weird. And now, you know, if you suck, no one wants to watch you. Like, you know, ESPN is not going to waste a spot for, you know, they're trying to get viewers. They're running a business, so it's tough. It's, I don't know if I've seen it before. I mean, I've seen them change channels before, yeah. But usually it's something smaller. But yeah, going from an actually nationally televised game at 9 p.m. to streaming at 7 p.m. I mean, it works out probably better schedule wise for West Virginia, but not for exposure, which is never good.
No, I can't imagine attendance for a 9 p.m. Wednesday game against Jamie Dixon and TCU. And I'm assuming here that they might have had something to do about they might have had a say in the start time, and it's probably just easier for West Virginia to get fans to come to a 7 p.m. game than a 9 p.m. game on a Wednesday night. I would imagine that's probably connected too. Hey, at least there's baseball season.
There is.
That's going well, okay. Right?
They're doing fine already. I actually was reading up on there. One of our more knowledgeable posters also shared on there, but I was looking at it too. The strength of schedule has been a little tougher. Like, obviously, there's a lot more fluctuation with only a handful of games being played, but there's some stiff competition early so far this season, and it's expected to continue that way. So,
yeah,
some
good 2-2, 2-2 three times in 4-game series. Doesn't sound like you're setting the world on fire, but you're not losing those series, and you're getting some good performances even in losses too. Not perfect, but like, man, they're still so young without guys. Like, Chris, they played a guy I'd never heard of, and it turned out he played like five games. And I know a little bit about the roster, but I was like, who is this guy from Pittsburgh, the freshman playing second base? Turns out he's pretty good. And they're just playing him because of the hole they have in their lineup right now with injuries to two guys who were starters, Birdie Kresser and, of course, J.J. Weatherholt. I figure they should have them back soon or later. Don't forget, Big 12 play starts Thursday? Not Friday, Thursday, because BYU is coming to town. Obviously, the Sunday thing is an issue there, so they work around that. But, like, they're starting Big 12 play Thursday. That is wild to start that easy, like, that early. I can't remember the last time they started this early. Probably the first time they started a conference game. Boy, since easily the Big East days, but more teams, got to play the games, travel, spread it out a little bit, and they will start Thursday. BYU, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Do not know about Weatherholt. We'll try to figure that out. Or Kresser, or trying to think. Clark, the pitcher from Northwoods. Robbie Porco, don't know about. Boy, I hear mixed reviews on that. Like, people tell me he probably won't play this season, but we'll see. They could certainly use some arms, but in the meantime, they're finding arms, they're finding bats, and don't be discouraged by 7-6 right now. Like, they always kind of stumble a little bit out of the gate, but they're getting good games, good schedule, some good wins, some good performances. But, well, you really got to be ready sooner than later now. And, like, Thursday, they really start to count for you, huh?
Yep, absolutely. And then, hey, we're only, what, 3 weeks away from spring football starting? I think that's when, let's say, late March. I've already got the visitor list up on the site for our VIP members. Guys are lining up those visits, and those dates that you're going to see on there, odds are those are going to be spring practice dates. Will we have access to those dates? We'll see. But March 27th, March 29th, stuff like that. I'm seeing guys, a lot of recruits lining up visits telling me they're going to go see some spring practices those days. Mike, real quick before we go, over or under 4.5 spring practice access for the media this year? There's 15 total. One of them's the spring game. So you're getting that one. We'll count that one. Say, how about over under 3.5 for the other 14 spring practices? How many will media be able to see?
Like watch them stretch and kick field goals? Like, most of them, probably. Like, I would say maybe, like, probably two a week. Okay. But, like, actually go in and get to do anything valuable, under, for sure. But that's one a week, right? Which doesn't seem like a lot, but, I mean, to come in and watch half an hour in the spring. Like, I don't know what nukes they're building or like, what plutonium they're enriching in the spring. But, like, that's just their practice. They don't. But it's all about vibes, Chris. The mood is good. The vibe is high right now. Maybe they'll let us in a little bit more. I'm typically wrong when it comes to stuff like that. Like, the years I'm optimistic, it's bad. The years I'm, like, grouchy, it's good. So let me be in the middle, and I'll land when the mood that will take me in the right direction. But I don't anticipate a lot, just because don't get a lot usually. But sometimes it's a surprise. Some days are like, hey, stick around for 45 minutes today. And you're like, well, I got to be back home in 10, right? Those are the best days. But I think we'll have some, but not a lot.
For reference, last year, two. But I think they changed it and added a couple more. So three if you include spring games. So I think it ended up being about five, because they did change the planned schedule and add a couple more. But
they typically do that. They typically, like, they're fluid and they get you in there in the end. But, hey, we'll find out when you find out. That'll be fun. As always, the unpredictable is the best, except for basketball. Until next time, I'm Mike Casazza.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
We will talk to you soon.